And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, joined by Tom Fornelli, and this is The Rewind. Tom, it was a Saturday where we go in, and I wouldn't say that there were tempered expectations, but I don't think there's any way that we were quite anticipating just a glorious day of football. We've got everything from, you know, a lot of shakeup in the top 10. We've got the redemption story out at USC, but most of all, we have one of the more memorable plays that we'll probably be talking about forever, as Ricardo Lewis is able to bobble the deflected pass and carry it on for the Jordan Hare prayer, the touchdown that leads Auburn to a victory against Georgia. Clearly, obviously, everyone has seen the play multiple times. Tom, let's start with this. Do you have a particular name that you like for this play? Because I think we've heard a lot of suggestions here less than 24 hours after it occurred.
I think I liked your suggestion more than anybody else's.
Just the tip?
Just the tip. It felt good.
Immaculate deflection, Jordan Hare prayer, the prayer at Jordan Hare. What are some of the other ones that you've heard that at least, you know, it seemed competitive with just the tip?
Why the hell didn't they just knock the damn ball down? Jesus Christ, blah, blah, blah. I'm so angry. That came from Georgia fans.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
And, yeah, Mark Richt has lost control of the Hail Mary.
Mark Richt has lost control of the Hail Mary.
Although that wasn't a Hail Mary. I heard so many people referring to that as a Hail Mary yesterday. And it's, speaking of stupid things to get mad about, but there was like 30 seconds left in the game. It was a 4th and 18. That's not a Hail Mary. That was just chucking it up and praying.
Yeah, that was just throwing it into double coverage.
Yeah, that was throwing it into double coverage because nobody else was open and you had to get rid of the damn ball because it was 4th down. You can't take the sack. So, I mean,
all right, well, let's dive into this game, because now Auburn, you know, as all of this is sort of fluctuating and the day is unfolding, and we will continue to get to some of these other games, you know, Auburn is able to win 43-38. They move to 10-1, 6-1 in the SEC. Their schedule is done except for that Iron Bowl, which they will host in Auburn as Alabama comes to town, and everything will be on the line. The SEC West. This is a chance to just accomplish so many things. This game in particular, it just seems like Georgia's defense had no real answer for the Auburn rushing attack, and Auburn's defense, particularly that defensive line, really impressed me. I don't know if I'm ready to say that they're going to beat Alabama yet. What was your takeaway first from Auburn, and then anything on Georgia that stood out to you?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to say Auburn's ready to beat Alabama yet either, but I think Auburn's very much capable of beating Alabama, because I picked Georgia going into this game because Georgia's run defense had been very good all season long. It was one of the better ones in the country. And I thought, you know, Auburn going against a good run defense might be forced to get a little too one-dimensional or more pass happy than Auburn really wants to be. And instead, Auburn goes out and rushes for 323 yards and nearly 6 yards a carry on that Georgia defense yesterday. So while Georgia's defense is nowhere near the level of Alabama's defense, that gives you some inclination, though, that Auburn might be able to move the ball pretty well against Alabama, because that was a good run defense it faced. So I think that Auburn has a pretty good shot at Alabama. I would still pick Alabama, but I can't write off the Tigers. I mean, and plus, like you mentioned, it's in Jordan Hare.
Yeah, and the Bulldogs, this was the wrong time for this defense, which, as you just mentioned, the D was improving. This was just the exact worst possible matchup for that improvement to show out. Well, it's Alabama, not exactly a pleasing performance in the eyes of old coach Nick Saban, as the Crimson Tide win 20-7 in Starkville. This is a slow starting offensive performance where they didn't really get the passing game going until the second half, and the defense played well. They forced some turnovers and, you know, kept Mississippi State from being able to do anything with the many opportunities that they were given. I look at this one as a sort of shrug of the shoulders. It was on the road. It was against Mississippi State. I mean, this is clearly going to be, for that team, a game where they're just coming in a little bit more invested than Alabama. I'm not throwing up any, you know, red flags or anything. They're 10-0. They're still number one.
No, Alabama was looking ahead to Chattanooga. They got caught.
Yeah, that's right. They were.
No, it was. I mean, they shut out Mississippi State in the first half. I think the stat was that's now 7 of 8 games where Alabama has shut out its opponent in the first half, which that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah.
But no, AJ McCarron just had a bad game. He didn't look very good. He barely completed half his passes. He had the 2 touchdowns, but he also had 2 interceptions. It was just a very un-game managing AJ McCarron-like game. And because of that, the Alabama offense struggled. And you got to give some credit to the Mississippi State because that defense really did keep them in check. Alabama did average nearly 6 yards a rush, but the PS defense was fine. And they got a decent enough pass rush to make AJ McCarron make some throws he didn't really want to make.
Yeah, that is true. Mississippi State's D probably played one of their best games of the season last year.
It's the offense got under 200 yards of total offense, which hard to win that way.
Yeah, just a little bit. So Alabama and then Florida State cruises 59-3 over Syracuse. They're playing hangman instead of playing football and still winning by 50.
I saw that this
one. did you hear that someone guessed it?
No.
All right. So for listeners who may not have seen it, there's a photo. We picked it up, saw it from at SB Nation's Tomahawk Nation, and put it on our site, CBSSports.com, and it shows. I think it was PJ Williams and Terrence Brooks, starting defensive backs for Florida State. They're sitting on the sideline with the whiteboard you normally use to draw up plays, and they're playing hangman. And we can zoom in, and you can kind of see what the word is. And Tom, I found out today that the word, first of all, was chicken, and it was guessed by a kid who was like in the 4th row on the sound, like in the stands.
I mean, honestly, if you're a coach, if you're Jimbo Fisher, you should be like, your natural reaction should be like, you know, you kind of ticked off that your players are doing, but how could you be mad if you found out your players are on the sideline playing hangman with the crowd? Like,
I'm cool with it.
I'd want to be mad. I just couldn't. I wouldn't be able to do anything but laugh and say, come on, guys, let's get our heads in the game.
Their offense and defense both rely on very complex schemes. I would be thankful that they were exercising their brain and their decision making.
Yes, for sure.
All right, so here we are now, a new debate that is sort of sprung up. Stanford, we will get more into Stanford, USC, and the Trojans Pac-12 chances here in just a little bit, but they sort of fall down, and now we are shrinking our number of teams that are right there at the top, and Ohio State and Baylor, we've got Baylor jumping Ohio State in the AP poll. Ohio State holds on to number 3 in the coaches poll. And I didn't like having the discussion, and you didn't either, of, oh, what happens if everybody finishes undefeated? But I think that at this point, you know, with only a couple weeks left in the regular season, it's going to start to become relevant of who is that next team in. Because should Alabama or Florida State lose, and that's still very much a possibility, as you just mentioned with Auburn and Florida State, man, something weird could happen in that Florida game or the ACC championship. If it's against Duke, I don't know. That could be different. But if one team loses, we need to know who would be that next team in. Ohio State takes care of Illinois. How would you describe that win? What would be the adjective you would use?
I thought it was pretty easy. I mean, they ran for over 450 yards. They averaged 10 yards a carry. They had 4 touchdowns at 50 yards or more. I know a lot of people see that final score and sit there and see, oh, wow, Ohio State gave up 35 points to Illinois, but they also put 60 on the board, and they did it with relative ease. And it's funny because you mentioned, I don't know who's better, Baylor or Ohio State. I have no way of knowing. But you mentioned how the AP moved Baylor up to 3 and knocked Ohio State back to 4 off of what they saw yesterday, correct?
Correct.
Well, here's the thing. Ohio State beats Illinois 60-35, had a 21-0 lead in that game before the crowd had even settled into their seats, and then just coasted to the finish line. That's a problem in voters' minds. Meanwhile, Baylor was losing on a neutral field. Mind you, Ohio State did this on the road. Baylor on a neutral field was losing to Texas Tech in the first quarter and had to come back and then won by three more points than Ohio State did. Baylor won 63-34. Ohio State wins 60-35. Ohio State's outcome was never in doubt, but somehow Ohio State is a problem in that game that they had to be voted down a spot. I don't get that.
So what do people – is it literally just – the scoreboard in your mind, because things
I think it just came to the seeing the scoreboard, which is similar, but just seeing that it was Illinois and not actually paying attention to how that game played out. Because like I said, it was 21-0 before you blinked. Ohio State was never in any kind of trouble in that game. And then they coasted and they took their foot off the pedal a little bit, as you know, a lot of college teams are prone to do in those situations. And Illinois had a decent offense all year. It put up some points, but it never had a chance to win the game. Ohio State was never in peril. Baylor was in peril, yet their win is more impressive.
Ohio State's defensive line starting to stand out a little bit to me. That seems like something that is giving me more confidence. I've got Ohio State at number 3 in our rankings, in our ballots that we fill out for the CBSSports.com 126, which you can go see on CBSSports.com and sort of let your voice be heard, vote teams up and down. It's a cool little gadget that the folks are developing for the site. But I see that. Then you've got Shazier at the second level of the defense. Carlos Hyde had a huge game yesterday. Braxton Miller is still awesome. I think this team is great. I'm with you. I don't have necessarily an idea one or the other, but I do feel like regardless of what kind of criticisms you want to make about the Big Ten schedule, I just think that Ohio State still is a better team right now. I give them like a slight edge if you're going to make me choose Coke or Pepsi.
Yeah, see, I have Baylor at number 3 in my rankings, but I had Baylor at number 3 before this week, and there was nothing, you know, that caused me to think there needed to be change. I really don't know. I think there's very good arguments for both teams. I think they're similar in – I think it would be a close game, put it that way. I don't know which team would win. I think if you played the game 10 times, each team would probably win 5.
What did you see from Oklahoma State in Oklahoma State's win, and how do you think that they will match up with Baylor?
I mean, Oklahoma State's just played very well. They got a slow start to the year, but they're one of those teams that they had the loss early. But they've improved every week. Things are getting better. They're just getting more consistent on offense. The defense isn't spectacular. It will probably give up points to Baylor like everybody else does. But I do think Oklahoma State, simply because that offense has finally found some consistency and Clint Shelf has become a dual threat amazing. You know, he's the god now for that. He led them in rushing yesterday. He had 95 yards rushing and another 2 touchdowns. He suddenly developed speed that I didn't know he had out of nowhere. I do think Oklahoma State's probably the toughest test Baylor has it for the rest of the year at this point, because I don't know if Texas, particularly the Texas we saw yesterday, would really give Baylor a real test at this point. So I think that Oklahoma State's the only thing standing between Baylor and an undefeated season.
The thing that stood out to me about that Oklahoma State-Texas game is offensively that was just such a great game plan from Oklahoma State, because I think they just flipped on the BYU game when Riley Nelson ran for 700 yards or whatever on the Texas defense. And they were like, oh, we've got a quarterback that can run all this same read option stuff. And they just basically ran back the exact same game plan on him, and Texas could do nothing about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's what Texas – it's strange because Texas hasn't really seen a whole lot of that since then, and it's not like Greg Robinson completely fixed that defense. It improved, but like you said, a lot of the game plans against Texas lately have been strange. And also, it's Case McCoy finally having that bad game.
Yeah.
He had the 3 interceptions, and he'd been playing really well until yesterday. He finally had the bad game, and Texas just couldn't overcome it, especially without Jonathan Gray.
Yeah, in the Texas-Baylor hypothetical – I believe that the greatest, like, Baylor's offense, you know, that's great. But if I'm looking at something that's going to make me feel comfortable one way or the other, I look at Baylor and Texas and think, man, Texas might struggle against Baylor's defense, particularly just the way that guys like KJ Morton, Ahmad Dixon, they just kind of have that, you know, they rush the passer a lot. They get a lot of good opportunities because they know the offense is going to be able to score. So they, it like, tips the opposition's hand and they can just play really aggressive. Like I could see Case McCoy with three turnovers against Baylor.
Yeah, Baylor literally they just pin the ears back and go, because what's the worst that's gonna happen? You're gonna score and then their offense will get a touchdown a second later.
Oh, you want to give the ball back to our offense? All right, that's
okay.
Cool.
Yeah, that's fine, cool.
All right. Meanwhile, out in the Pac-12, we've got USC, just a really awesome football game, 2017, taking care of business in the Coliseum. Coach O, sort of the big national story here. Before we get to him and sort of, you know, what you might like or not like, what's your read on that situation? The Trojans are now in a position to maybe sneak up and steal the Pac-12 South, and maybe, just maybe, they need some help, as Arizona State did beat them, but they've got Colorado and UCLA, and you know, it's a pretty incredible story here. It's 5 out of 6 under Coach Ogeron, and 4 in a row, including victories over Utah, Oregon State, and the most recent one against Stanford. Everybody beats Cal. That doesn't count. So, what do you think about the Trojans? I see defense. I see a physical rushing attack, and a Marquise Lee sort of just delivering, putting the team on his back and delivering a couple of those huge receptions. It just seemed like a complete win.
Yeah, I mean, this is the team that we thought we were going to see. You know, it's because there's always been a ton of talent on this team. The question has just been depth. And now you have to really wonder what the quote-unquote desire was of this team, because they just look entirely different since Lane Kiffin was gone and Ed Orgeron took over. It looks like a team that's not, you know, that's playing football because it wants to be playing football, not because it's supposed to play football. It's just something you weren't seeing under Kiffin. And they can still win the Pac-12 South, but I think the task is a bit too tall at this point, simply because they basically need Arizona State to lose twice and they need to beat UCLA. And I don't know if that's all that's going to happen, but then again, a lot of things happen in college football that you don't expect to happen.
Right. Well, who do you give the edge to? UCLA, who gets to host Arizona State next weekend?
I would. In that game, I think Arizona State could certainly lose to UCLA, but it's a very important game for Arizona State because winning it basically clinches the division for them.
Any three-way head-to-head ties are for two-way ties. If there is a three-way tie in that Pac-12 South, some conferences use BCS standings. They actually do one of those eliminator tiebreakers in the Pac-12 where, like, you just slowly try and whittle the group down to two so it can be head-to-head. So the head-to-head loss to Arizona State, you are right, probably going to keep the Trojans out of the Pac-12 title game. But still, what do you think about Coach O?
I think that the people who are demanding that he gets the USC job now aren't really thinking that through.
Yeah.
I think he's getting himself a job somewhere.
Yeah.
But I don't – I see no way in hell that USC brings him as the head coach, simply because it's not, you know, like, there's the reports that they're going to pay $6 million. They're willing to pay $6 million for the next head coach, and it's USC. USC wants to hire somebody that, you know, it's SoCal, it's LA. They want to hire the headliner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Coach O's done a great job, and there's nothing you can say against what he's done, but there's simply no way he's the head coach. He possibly returns as defensive coordinator and recruiting coordinator and all that kind of stuff again next year. But I think he's coaching right now to get a head coaching job somewhere else. And I think, based on what he's done, I think he deserves another shot at it.
Yeah, he should be a head coach somewhere, unless he decides to do the Luke Fickle. And while I initially thought
he
that
might
was...
just be happy there. You never know.
Yeah, and initially, that's what I kind of thought, and I'd been suggesting that when asked, you know, what happens with Coach O, and all of a sudden, I'm very interested now. I'm trying to look around, listen, and get a feel for it, because I think yesterday you finally started to hear some sentiment from people that know that maybe having him hang around would be a tough position for someone else to walk into, and I wonder if USC already has the backup plan in Jack Del Rio, and now it's like, yeah, you go out there and you try and get someone. Absolutely. I mean, that's what you do.
If you're the new coach coming in and you get off to a slow start and Ed Orgeron's still there, The fan base is going to be, oh, bring back, oh, you should have
done. Oh, yeah.
It's not exactly the best position to be in.
All the other fallout from this game, Stanford loses. They've got two conference losses, and now Oregon is right back in position in the Pac-12 North. They played a game against Utah that apparently no one paid attention to.
Yeah, here's the thing. It was funny because that Oregon game, I was paying attention to it early, and Oregon got off to the slow start, and you're kind of like, uh-oh, it looks like, Stanford might get them 2 weeks in a row here. And then Utah scored with like a few minutes left in the second quarter, and it was 10-7, and you're like, oh. But then Oregon literally put together an Oregon drive where it went down the field in like four plays in 33 seconds, and bam, touchdown. And from that point on, Oregon was Oregon. And it's really not much to report from that game besides Oregon rebounded just fine. And now, they're probably going to end up in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, that's they had some internet Twitter friendly jerseys as far as just being looking like a gray clay sort of feel to it, but completely under the radar.
Hell were those jerseys?
They looked like something that I like made in my elementary school art class and brought home and was like, "Here, mommy."
I mean, I know it's hard to remember every single uniform combination that Oregon's ever worn, but I don't remember what those are. And you're right, it was like a clay color, and how is that an Oregon color? Like a light top type brownish muddy kind of deal.
We saw a lot of gray uniforms. Northwestern was wearing the grays with the American jerseys, right?
Those things were hideous looking.
And then there were the gray jerseys on Kansas. And oh my gosh, have you seen?
Oh my god, Gray, red, and blue. I mean, just for future information, if you're going to have the colors of gray, red, and blue, just don't do it. Because that looks terrible together.
All right, let's sort of just start knocking some of these games out. Big, very, very big Big Ten Legends game. As Michigan State, they go to Lincoln, they defeat Nebraska. And, Tom, this was a just sort of sequence of events that made I was very impressed. I feel like I'm jumping at this maybe too much, so bring me back to earth if I'm not. But to see that sort of dagger sequence of executing the fake field goal on fourth down, then you face third and long, I think it was like third and 16, 17, or 18, and Cook drops back there and throws the touchdown pass. At that point in the game with Nebraska, and Michigan State had not played fantastic to that point, in my opinion. And Nebraska was real. I mean, Abdullah was running the ball well. Nebraska had really given, like, they had like four or five turnovers. They'd like lost the ball in their own end zone. It was entirely Nebraska combusting. But at that moment, I was like, okay, to flip the switch and be able to deliver that in this key possession of the game, I think that sort of separates you and makes me feel comfortable saying that they are a good team.
They are. It was nice to see them deliver that dagger, but like you're saying, that dagger should have been delivered in the very first quarter.
Yeah, because Nebraska was giving them every opportunity possible.
Nebraska had five turnovers on the game, but three of them came in the first quarter, literally on Nebraska's first three possessions of the game, setting up Michigan State with fantastic field position. Yet after the first quarter, the score was 10-7, Michigan State.
Yeah, they should have. Yeah. They should have taken care of that a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I have to give Nebraska some props. I mean, it beat itself pretty bad yesterday, but at the same time, to make it, and this probably just makes it feel a little worse. Nebraska did what I haven't seen anybody else do all season. They ran the ball well against Michigan State. They finished with 180, but they got 5.7 yards a pop, which is not something I typically see teams doing against Michigan State. So it was there for Nebraska, which I think is those five turnovers. Like I said, it makes it hurt worse because Nebraska should have won that game. Had Nebraska not turned the ball over five times, it played well enough to win that game and would probably be playing for another Big Ten title.
The Spartans are in that driver's seat right now, 6-0. In conference play, and one more win will clinch a bid into that Big Ten title game. But my question for you is, do you think they get the win against Northwestern and then maybe fall to Minnesota, or do they win out? I think they either go 1-1 or 2-0. I don't see them dropping the next two, which would obviously actually open up the door for Minnesota.
Yeah, no, I see Michigan State winning out. I mean, I like Minnesota, and I like what Minnesota's done, but first of all, they start with Northwestern on the road next week, and Northwestern is cursed. That's clear as day now. They've got some sort of game day curse. I mean, the way that they lost that game yesterday, you think, surely there's no way Northwestern can blow this one, and yet Northwestern always finds a way to blow the game this season. But Minnesota, they've played well. They're 8-2. It's a really good story. But no, once they're not going to be able to hang with Michigan State. It's just not going to happen. Not in East Lansing.
So then Michigan State, now I will ask again, 11-1, 8-0. I guess they would be
and
up.
They'll be ranked 15th.
Yeah, and doesn't really matter where they're ranked. They're number 13 now. But you know, do you give them a pretty good chance against Ohio State?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, simply because that defense is going. We saw last year the game between Ohio State and Michigan State last year was in East Lansing. Final score was 17-16.
It's probably gonna be something like that.
Yeah, it was like that was really the closest I thought Ohio State, that and that Purdue game. I thought that was the closest Ohio State was going to come to a loss last year. Michigan State, that defense knows how to, you know, slow down the Ohio State offense. It knows how to slow down that kind of attack simply because when it comes to the offenses like Ohio State and those, when they spread it out and all that kind of things, it's simply about sticking to your assignment, sticking to your gap, and being able to cover in man. And that's what Michigan State's defense does better than anybody else's in the country. So I don't know that they win, but I would not expect Ohio State to be much more than a 4 or 5 point favorite in that game.
South Carolina, they have wrapped up their SEC season, and they have finished 6-2 in conference play, 8-2 overall at this point, still have Coastal Carolina, and then they will host Clemson in that annual in-state rivalry. The Gamecocks didn't play a great game against Florida. They trailed 14-7, ended up being able to pull it all together. Kind of a weird game for the Gamecocks, but I'm not throwing up any flags of concern as they do play Coastal Carolina. And Clemson, while that would be nice, you know, for each of their team's individual bragging rights and potential BCS at-large implications, I think right now if you are a South Carolina fan, your eyes are on Missouri. And what are you thinking for Missouri as they now have to go to Ole Miss and then host Texas A&M, where one loss in those two games, and then all of a sudden South Carolina's up there in the SEC East lead?
I feel bad for Missouri fans for yesterday. I mean, if you think about just Auburn, the Georgia comeback against Auburn nearly happened, but it didn't. But then most specifically, Florida having that lead against South Carolina. Because if Florida wins that game, Missouri's going to the SEC title game.
Yeah, that's locked. There's no pressure on these last two games.
Because, like you said, those last two games that Missouri has to play against Ole Miss and against Texas A&M, I can't see that team coming out of there with at least one loss. And if it loses, South Carolina's going to the SEC title game. So, yeah, that was a tough night for Mizzou fans last night, even though they didn't play.
Ole Miss, they had inferior competition, but Dr. Bo Wallace was getting after it. just playing pitch and catch out there.
He brought out Moncrief. The scalpel, started cutting away.
Ole Miss is back in. Ole Miss back in the AP top 25. The last three spots are like USC, Ole Miss, and Duke, where Coach O, obviously Ole Miss connection, and Coach Cutcliffe, obviously Ole Miss connection. Those three teams all just hanging out.
Yeah, well, Cecil Hurt from the from Alabama. I can't remember what paper he's writing at now. Anyways, he's an Alabama beat reporter. He tweeted this morning that he said, you know, David Cutcliffe's got a team ranked. Ed Orgeron's got a team ranked. It's time somebody hired Houston Nutt.
Oh, it is. It is. Hey, if anybody wants to check him out, you know, you can always catch him on CBS Sports Network on Inside College Football with Adam Zucker and Brian Jones and Aaron Taylor. That's all my pitching for now. All right, from South Carolina, from Steve Spurrier's current team to his former team, the Duke Blue Devils, Tom,
woo,
are sitting in a mighty fine position. But there are 32 potential ACC Coastal Division scenarios.
32.
And it's potential winners. You have Virginia Tech has 11 scenarios. that where they win in the
is
32
there any
options.
Scenario when somehow Louisville wins the ACC?
There is not. There is not.
Oh, okay.
It's 11 for Virginia Tech. It's 10 for Duke. And then Miami and Georgia Tech have the slimmest odds. But of those four teams, the only one that controls its own destiny is the Duke Blue Devils, who after a victory over Miami, 45-30, now they have in-state battles against Wake Forest and North Carolina. And oh, man, it is a crazy, crazy time here. And we're talking about who's going to play Florida State in the ACC championship game. This is
It's
a very important situation, and it's unbelievably confusing. What's Duke's ranked again? I mean, this is the first time they've been ranked since the 1994 season. You think that Duke's going to be able to hold it together? This is a position that they have never been in as a program to be the front runner. I mean, they have upset teams, but this is it. They have everything in their own hands for the first time in a long time. Do you think that they get it done at Wake, at North Carolina, and finish 10-2 and play Florida State for the ACC championship game?
I can't ponder the possibility of Duke being in that position, especially because you look at those last two games. Wake Forest and North Carolina aren't exactly, you know, fantastic teams, but at the same time, I didn't think Duke had a chance to beat Miami this week, and well, we all know how that worked out now.
Yeah.
I would favor North Carolina simply because I think the Tar Heels are actually playing pretty well lately.
Yep.
And I shouldn't use the word favor, but I think Duke will have some problems with North Carolina, and I wouldn't be surprised if Duke ended up losing that game. But I just feel like that with all 32 of the possibilities that it's going to end up being Virginia Tech just because it's Virginia Tech and yeah, it's the Coastal.
Yeah, the teams that are left, I said Miami and Georgia Tech have the slimmest number of slimmest odds as far as the number of combinations that could turn up hurricanes, I guess you could say. But, you know, at Pittsburgh there on the last game of the season, you know, what's going to happen there? Because I think the number that we're going to have is if Miami's out of it, then we've got to start going on the head-to-heads. And if Duke loses to North Carolina, we'll be at 5-3. So it'll basically be dependent on – so Virginia Tech beats Virginia. I don't even feel confident in that, actually.
No, I don't feel confident in Virginia Tech doing anything.
Nope. I mean, Clemson, Georgia Tech is what got this all started. Are you what's going to be sort of your final read, your final opinion on Clemson?
I just hope Taj Boyd's okay.
Yes.
I forgot everything that had happened in that game up until that point. You know what I mean?
It was like were so traumatized by the thought that Taj Boyd might be hurt, like,
it was
badly.
Like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
And then you see him on the side. It's like, oh, I just hope he can come back and play. Because that first of all, it's just a terrible way to end your college career. But it's also because Clemson is still a team that I think can get to a BCS bowl game. They need help. But, yeah, it's I just hope he's okay.
Well, Clemson up to number 7 in the AP poll, number 6 mm-hmm. in the coaches poll. I mean, do you consider them in that conversation as being a team of Baylor, Oregon, Auburn, Missouri, Oklahoma State, Texas A&M caliber?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I do. I feel like people have knocked Clemson too much lately simply because of that loss to Florida State. But Florida State's beating the hell out of everybody.
Yeah.
It's still a Clemson team that beat Georgia when Georgia was still healthy, mind you. Not the Georgia we're seeing now where half the team is injured. Georgia was still healthy in that game. So it's not like this is a bad Clemson team. They beat Georgia open the year. They beat LSU in a bowl game last year. It's the same team. It's better this year, I think.
Yeah,
so,
I think.
Yeah, I would still put it in that category.
Yeah, defense, improved defense, play of guys like, you know, defensive end Vic Beasley, who's being mentioned for a lot of All-American lists as that that time of the year is upon us. All right, we are running long. All right, real
That's
quick,
fine.
Mountain West. Who do you think makes it to the Mountain West title game, and what do you think happens?
It's Boise and Fresno, and I would lean Boise right now simply because Boise is a team to me that is improving as the season goes along, and Fresno is kind of just flatlined, and it's flatlined in a good way in that, you know, it's still winning, but it's not really taking that next step up. And let's not forget that that game that was played in Fresno earlier this year was a 41-40 final. And I feel like Boise State's a better team now than it was then, and Fresno's pretty much the same team.
New Mexico at home next Saturday. New Mexico's got a pretty good offense at San Jose State, a very inconsistent Spartans team on Friday, November 29th on CBS Sports Network. It'll be a nice little Thanksgiving Friday afternoon game. And that's what Fresno State has left. And like you said, probably going to be – I think they might already have the division clinched. But, you know, we're talking about with Fresno State and Northern Illinois, who was able to defeat Ball State this past week. Where are they in this mix as UCF was able to escape Temple with really one of the most incredible sequences? Like, we got, like, three awesome, awesome finishes yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. Do you think UCF is going to be able to –
No complaints here.
Yeah, do you think UCF finishes above Fresno and Northern Illinois by the final BCS standings?
No. They're not there. Well, we haven't seen tonight's standings, but I considering the way UCF won that game, I don't think it'll change. But if they're not above them now, it's just I don't see what else is left on UCF's schedule that could cause them to jump up higher in the BCS standings. I mean, sure, if NIU and Fresno lose, yes, they'll finish higher.
That's really what I'm thinking. Do you think that – and I think NIU and Fresno could both be losing, and if I'm a Wisconsin fan – If I'm a Clemson fan, if I am, I guess even Stanford could maybe even be in that position. If I'm one of these teams that is shut out from conference title competition, but still hanging up there in the top 10, I'm basically rooting for whoever is playing Fresno and Northern every week.
Oh, for sure.
And I think both of those teams have a potential to lose.
Yeah, I mean, people, if you just look at the final score of the NIU-Ball State game, you'll think Northern blew them out. But anybody who watched the game knew that was very much not the case. And you look at Northern's schedule for the rest of the year, they get Toledo on the road on Wednesday night. And Toledo just beat Buffalo, and Toledo has been playing very well as of late. So that's going to be a tough game. Toledo's always tough at home. And then in the MAC title game, they're going to get either Buffalo or Bowling Green. And those are, you know, two tough teams that – Bowling Green's got a really good defense, and Buffalo can put some points on the board. So they've still got a couple games. That Western Michigan game, they'll be fine. They'll beat Western Michigan by 80. But those other two games, Northern has a legitimate chance of losing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at now. All right, let's go to great individual performances. Does our boy Cartel have a spot at the top of your list?
No.
Damn. Well, the guy set the NCAA
record.
He's got a name
at the top of my list. I love the fact that he's named Cartel.
Cartel Brown, of course, a D3 Heidelberg student princes, runs for 465 yards, breaking the NCAA single-game rushing record that was set earlier this season by Octavius McCoy. Congrats to you. Keep doing your thing with the student princes.
Yes.
All right, who else you got?
I got a bunch of guys. I got Marshall quarterback Rakeem Cato.
Woo!
I got UCF quarterback Blake Bortles.
Bortles combat.
I got Boston College running back Andre Williams.
That's right.
I got Colorado State's kid Capri Bibbs.
Ooh!
I got Carlos Hyde.
Woo!
I got UCF's JJ Wharton because that catch, man. He had good numbers overall, but he could only have that one catch, and he'd be on my list.
Well, he had like 11 catches, 140
and three
yards,
touchdowns.
Yeah, ridiculous.
And you got Northern Illinois' De'Ron Brown, who had a couple touchdowns with like nearly 200 yards receiving.
But
my player of the week, okay? My player of the week is Kansas running back James Sims, who rushed for 211 yards and three touchdowns. But more importantly than his stat line, he led Kansas to a victory and helped end Kansas's 27-game Big 12 losing streak. 27 straight conference games the Jayhawks had lost, Chip. 27. Dana Holgorsen just got fired on Saturday, Chip.
I am so sad that I missed on that. Getting to watch that Charlie Weiss Gatorade bath. Have you seen it?
Oh yeah, I saw it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I didn't see it until today, and it made me so happy. I think that's a time where you love GIFs because that you don't have to hit rewind or replay. You can just like sit there and giggle for as long as you want.
Giggling like an idiot now.
Dana Holgorsen, is that a job that you're starting to take seriously as far as, you know, part of our job at working for CBSSports.com is trying to figure out, you know, the stability of each job, what jobs might be coming open, where interest is being generated. Are you going to start sort of digging around the scary place of Morganton, West Virginia? Do you think that Dana Holgorsen might get himself in some trouble with the administration here at the end of the season?
Oh, I think so. He lost to Kansas, Chip.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not like West Virginia's having a very good season on its own. They've gone backwards since that Orange Bowl game against Clemson a few years ago. And it's like the last time Kansas won a Big 12 game, it was against Colorado in 2010 or whatever it was. And then 3 days later, Dan Hawkins was still coaching Colorado at the time. But 3 days after losing to Kansas, Dan Hawkins got fired.
Coach killers. The Kansas coach killers.
They win one Big 12 game every 3 years, but when they do, they take your job.
They took her down. Oh man, we got another big week. I will encourage you to go to iTunes and subscribe to the Ion College Football Podcast, and then review, rate us. Get at us on Twitter at Tom Fornelli, at Chip_Patterson. Tom, what is the game that you are most looking forward to here as we transition to week 13?
Illinois versus Purdue.
Woo! Oh, man, the champagne room is going to be popping off for that game.
Oh, for sure. Speaking of ending conference losing streaks. No, I'm really looking forward to Arizona State, UCLA. I think that's going to be quite a fun one. And then Texas A&M, LSU. What else? You know what I mean? How can you not be looking forward to that game?
Baylor, Oklahoma State.
Oh, yeah. That game's happening too, isn't it?
Yeah. Oregon, Arizona. Boy, that one could be fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting matchups next week.
Oh, and Missouri Ole Miss is going to be Oxford at 7:45. So that'll be blackout.
Yeah. There are a lot of good games next week, aren't there?
We hope you will join us for them. Make sure you follow Ion College Football on Twitter at IonCFB. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.